This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Our Master Cheesemaker program is one of the only two in the world. So it's no wonder every master in America has called Wisconsin home. Find your next favorite cheese and meet our makers at wisconsincheese.com.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni, I'm the host here, and it's Tuesday, December 7th, 2021. So this is a good day, the holidays are coming, it's also Pearl Harbor Day. It's a good day to talk about giving back. And a few months ago, I was talking with Lawson's Finest, and they suggested that we talk about their giving program. So we have a few guests on, and that's our theme tonight. So let's go around the room and have everyone introduce themselves. Start with Karen.
Hi, I'm Karen Lawson, co-owner of Lawson's Finest Liquids, based in Waitsfield, Vermont.
All right, thanks for joining us. Erin?
Hi, everyone. This is Erin Maciel. I'm the owner of Anesta Coffee in Saratoga Springs, New York.
Oh, man, this is going to be a great show. And Richard?
Hi, everybody. My name is Richard Thomas. I'm a co-owner and brewer at Argyle Brewing Company, and we're in Greenwich, New York.
All right. So, you know, everybody in business does something. You know, you've got a pub or a restaurant. You donate gift cards to, you know, school PTAs, or, you know, you've got a bigger operation and you give space to community fundraisers and other things. So I think we all understand the concept of giving back. But we're going to talk with these three individuals about their programs and what they're doing, whether it's global or local. And we're going to have a pretty great show, especially Christmas coming up. Just want to say I'm also inspired by Garrett Oliver and the work he's done the last year and a half setting up the Michael J. Jackson Foundation, which has been providing scholarships for people of color to go to places like Siebel Institute and get the credit accreditation that they deserve to be working in the industry. So let's start with Karen. So Karen, the backstory was that I had Sean Lawson on not too long ago, and your team said, you know, next time you should talk with Karen about Lawson's Finest and Giving Back program. So why don't you tell us about that and how you're involved in it and how it came about? Because that's kind of like the hook for this whole episode.
Yeah, that's great. So again, I'm Karen Lawson, and my husband Sean and I own Lawson's Finest Liquids in Waitsfield, Vermont. And we started our brewery back in 2008, but it was home-based. We basically had a shed-style building next to our house that was not open to the public. And so for 10 years, Sean brewed beer out of this side building next to our house, and it wasn't until 2018 where we opened our tap room and brewery in Waitsfield. And, you know, philanthropy and supporting the community was always important to us as business owners. And so as a mom and pop operation, when we first started for those 10 years, our donations were really based on a portion of our sales. But when we opened our tap room and our brewery in Waitsfield, we really saw the opportunity to go way bigger with our impact. And so we created our social impact program, and there's essentially six initiatives within that. Probably the most well-known here in Vermont is our Sunshine Fund, and that's based out of our tap room, where because our staff receive living wages and generous benefits, they don't accept tips. Essentially, when people come to enjoy our tap room and our beers, hospitality is included, but we're also normalized when we go out to a restaurant or to a bar to tip. And so we use that opportunity to offer our guests the opportunity to provide donations. And so each month we have two different nonprofits that we highlight in the Sunshine Fund in the tap room. And it's up to our guests to decide if they want to donate and how much they want to donate. And it's been a really powerful program. I can tell you, Jimmy, that just in the 3 years that we've had the Sunshine Fund, we've been able to donate over $350,000 just through that initiative.
Wait, in how many years?
Actually, no, it's way more than that. Hang on. So in 3 years, $757,000.
Wow. That's a lot of loose change, isn't it?
And that's just here in the tap room. And we have other social impact initiatives within our program here in Vermont. And what we do is also we brew special beers for a cause. And for example, we brew a Kingdom Trails IPA where we donate a portion of the sales to a certain cause. Kingdom Trails is a nonprofit up in the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont, and they are basically protecting the natural beauty of Vermont for hiking and biking. And so we brew a beer at least annually, and it's one of my favorites when it's out, Kingdom Trails IPA. You got to try it if you see it, because it never lasts long. And we're able to use our platform as a values-based business to really support the community that we live in. And we really prioritize that based on the people and the places in Vermont. So people being, you know, let's support people in their most basic needs around food and economic security and shelter. And let's also make sure that we're supporting our environment and making sure that it's sustainable for generations to come, that we have good water to both drink and make beer with and recreate in.
Wow. Well, that's Karen. So I'm going to stop. That's a great start. We're going to go to some of our other guests and get a little intro as well. Let's go to Richard at Argyle. I've been to Argyle in Cambridge, New York, the tasting room, and then also Argyle, the brewery in Greenwich. So it's great to meet you. Richard, you're very involved in your community there, and it's definitely more of like a hyperlocal operation. So tell us about some of the giving back that you do in your community.
Sure. Richard Thomas here, co-owner. My two partners are Chris Castrio and Matt Stewart. And a word that we like to use, when we discuss what our brewery does in the community is fellowship. And we like to provide a space for, you know, we're in a very agricultural community, and we like to, you know, bring local producers in. We have makers markets. We like to utilize our brewery tap rooms as spaces to bring people together and to learn about what other people in the community are producing, how they're producing it, provide an opportunity to market their goods. And then in addition to being a farm brewery ourselves, we take some of those raw materials and we make our beers with those. We like to put an educational component into that. We certainly spend a lot of time bringing people in and showing them how beer is made. A lot of people don't understand all of the different things that go into producing beer, and especially using local ingredients that may have a lot of different variables that you have to take into consideration. And so a lot of what we do is very community-based, and the way we like to give back is to, you know, integrate with our community and support it in any way that we can.
Great. So why don't we go to Aaron now? So tell us a little bit about Ernesto Coffee, and then we'll all bring it all together.
Sure. Thanks so much, Jimmy. So I'm Aaron Maciel. I'm the co-owner of Ernesto Coffee here in Saratoga Springs, New York. We launched this year, early 2021, and we are the sole importer of Cafe Ernesto. Cafe Ernesto is a collective of women farmers in Brasilia, Brazil, which is the capital of Brazil, and also in Minas Gerais, which is a large coffee growing region in central Brazil. So the main thing that drew me to bringing Cafe Ernesto here was its connection to sustainability, promotion of organic farming in Brazil. Brazil is, you know, it's a big coffee producing country. And so when you drive through Minas Gerais, I couldn't believe the first time I went there. It's like driving through, you know, cornfields in Nebraska, right? So it is machine-based, huge ranches. And so we kind of are changing the model with that and supporting small farmers and women farmers in this area. So one thing that is really important with Nesta Coffee is how we can support women year-round. So one thing is that many times when we buy green coffee, it goes right onto a ship. It travels the globe, unfortunately, sometimes, and can sit there for up to a year before it actually gets to the U.S. And so we are changing that. We roast with farmers. We roast in Brasilia, and it gets to us within 1 week. And so one thing that's really exciting is that we're able to expand employment opportunities for women in Brazil throughout the year, outside of harvest season.
Wow, that's great. So Erin, I know that you're also a landscape architect. Did you get into this because you wanted to do something with Brazil, or you were going to open a coffee business? What was the real hook for this?
So I went to Brazil as a landscape architect and lived there for 6 months years ago, 15 years ago. I ended up loving Brazil. I met my husband there. We actually lived there for a couple of years, and then we moved to the United States. And so we go back and forth for years now. And I've always looked for an opportunity to, you know, how can I bring what I love of Brazil to the U.S. and provide a positive impact and bring money and funds back to Brasilia and you know, anywhere in Brazil. And so when our friends that are fellow architects as well put together this collective, I said, oh, this is it. This is what really connects the global, like how can we be globally conscious and support a product that's actually connected to the values that we believe in.
Wow, that's a great intro from all of you. Now let's go back to Karen. I cut you off, but already you got me with the Sunshine Fund instead of tips. You guys are getting great donations. What's a project that really stands out for you from the Sunshine Fund? It can be as little or big as it is?
That's a great question. And what's really neat is I've been able to blend my previous occupation with what I do here at Lawson's Finest. So when Sean and I were growing Lawson's Finest, literally from a mom and pop operation to where we are now with over 60 staff, I had a 20-year career in the state of Vermont in human services. And wow. So I worked really closely with a lot of nonprofits in our state. And it's just been this really neat connection of bringing them back into the fold through our Sunshine Fund and being able to highlight those organizations here and really educate folks that come here to our tap room to let them know there's so many really incredible organizations out there serving our populations and helping our environment. And so two that really are stand out for me, one is Pathways Vermont. And that's an organization, when I worked for the Department of Corrections, they were one of the few organizations that really stepped up to the plate and helped folks that were leaving incarceration and reentering the community make a life after that. And a lot of the folks that come out of incarceration have some real barriers. I mean, poverty is a huge one, housing, finding employment, and oftentimes add mental health or substance abuse to that. And it just can be really problematic for folks to start a new life when they leave prison. And Pathways Vermont really just has their arms open to anyone who wants help, not only coming out of incarceration, but folks that are living in Vermont and struggling and looking for some help to just manage day to day. And another example is today, we gave our November Sunshine Fund donation check to the Vermont River Conservancy. And they are going to use their $18,000 that we gave them to really improve a downtown Montpelier park that it's right in the capital downtown. A lot of visitors and locals use it, and they're going to use our funds to create an ADA compliant Park, where it's much easier to get to. It'll be well taken care of year round. As you can imagine, the snow and the ice can be really tricky. And so they're using our donation to make sure that downtown Montpelier has an ADA accessible park for everyone to enjoy.
Wow, that's great. It sounds like somebody wrote a job description and you filled it, right?
Well, I can tell you, I joke all the time that I'm the one person at Lawson's Finest who's had the most job descriptions. I basically do whatever needs to be done. But now that we're maturing and our tap room has been open for 3 years, I'm really able to focus much more on our social impact program.
Wow. And then for Richard, how important is a giving back to your brewery? Is it something that you have to write down and have a mission statement? Or is it just something that you're doing as part of how you run your place?
It's built into the philosophy of our business. I think for the three of us owners, it was kind of an unsaid part of our mission statement from the beginning, where, you know, we wanted to be a farm brewery, and we looked forward to the opportunities that would provide us in terms of communicating with farmers locally, talking with them about how they grow their food, talking with them about what we would like to see if we were going to purchase pumpkins for our annual pumpkin ale in the fall. These are the types of pumpkins we would look for, and these are the ways that we would like them to be grown. And it's really rewarding for me, because I get to be the one who often gets to go to the farm, and invariably I'll bring a few beers with me. And after we discuss, what materials I'm going to be taking back to the brewery with me, I always spend some time just hanging out, learning about their business. They'll take me around and show me how they do what they do. Getting the sense that they're so appreciative that we respect their product, and we will, share what they do with everyone else in the community. That's kind of the biggest reward that I get out of it. And it never gets old.
So tell me about, which farm did you pick the pumpkins from? What kind of pumpkins, and what farm is it?
So we use Hand Melon Farm in Greenwich for our pumpkins. And we look for a New England pie pumpkin, because we want the enhanced sugar in the flesh of the pumpkin. We feel it really comes through in the beer. So that's, that's one example. There's so many other local products that we work with. Our kind of our flagship spring seasonal beer is our maple porter. And so we bring in concentrated reverse osmosis maple sap from a local producer every year. And we actually replace the water in the whole brewing process with that sap. And it's a beer that is fun to make. It's not so fun to clean the brewing equipment after we make that one, but everyone in our community kind of looks forward to it. Usually when we release it, there's a line out the door, and it's just a fun day when we have that one. Those are the kinds of things that, really motivate us.
That's really cool. And then for Aaron, just another intro question. So when you go to Brazil, how do you connect acting globally and locally?
So I think one thing that's really exciting is that we're working with a network of small batch organic farmers that are really pushing back on that, big scale coffee. And so we can essentially repeat what we do here, in the Saratoga region or in Washington County, where we're connecting with the small farmers, very similar to what Rich said. It's so exciting to be on the farm and actually hear the stories of, maybe it was their grandparents' farm, or how many generations they've been working on the farm. And so that's something that is really exciting to see, that we are tapping into that network and bringing that the coffee here with that same system that we would be doing here using local growers, but for something that we can't grow locally here. So that's great. What I'm really excited about.
And tell us how you came together with Rich, because the reason you guys are on is that you guys are doing a collaboration.
Yeah, so we sell at the Cambridge Co-op. We got set up there a couple months ago, and it's right across the street from their tap room in Cambridge, and it's this cool train station, rehab train station. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll just walk over there and give some samples. And here we are, you know, talking about, you know, a collaboration with beer. And it was really kind of just by chance that I met Rich at the tap room that day and was able to give him some samples. And then we started brewing up the beer a couple weeks ago, and it was so much fun. It was a great day.
Wow. Rich, since we're also talking to Karen from Vermont, you guys are right on the border, and I've actually been there. I've been to Cambridge and then Bennington, Vermont. How is your New York side of this? I'm going back to food and drink. We used to talk about how everything from Vermont 10, 15 years ago was considered green and pure. And then we wanted the New York side to feel that way. So, you know, when I cross that border, I'm in New York, and then the other, just on the other side is Vermont, like Bennington. What's different? Do you know when you actually cross the border? Is food different? Is beer different?
So I don't think so. You know, when you cross the border into Washington County, other than the color of the license plates, you're not going to notice a big difference. It's still very rural, agricultural. There's lots of amazing local food being produced. We have Argyle Cheese Farmer, maple syrup. It's pretty indistinguishable in our little neck of the woods when you cross that border. As you head maybe more west and south, maybe down to Albany, you know, you're going to start to see things change pretty quickly. But you know, we're, a lot of us kind of think of ourselves sometimes as honorary Vermonters up here. So
you want to be.
I think the true test is, do you still give that 7-car spacing when you're driving on the roads? That's when you know that you've crossed over into New York, because
absolutely.
People are way more actually, in a rush.
That's funny you say that. We definitely do that up here. When I used to work in Albany, and I always knew when I was getting far from home, because the tailgating would begin as I got closer to Albany, and just the manners on the road would completely change.
Yeah, Karen, that you probably have a good insight. Tell us about Waitsfield.
Waitsfield, yeah,
because I've never been, so it sounds like it's a similar place as where these other guys are from.
Waitsfield is one of 6 other towns that comprise what we call the Mad River Valley. The Mad River runs through all of our towns, and Warren hosts Sugarbush Ski Area, so a lot of folks know that. Faiston hosts Mad River Glen Ski Area. And then Waitsfield is just down the mountain from both of those ski areas, and it's really the village. It's where you go grocery shopping. It's where you come to Lawson's Finest Tap Room. And what's really, I think, unique about our area, and especially given that we are 6 towns that come together, is really the sense of community. And that was really a driving force for us here at Lawson's Finest around creating our social impact program and making sure that we used our business to support the community. Because, you know, I'll give you a perfect example. Just down the road, an 80-year-old man, unfortunately, he lost his house in a fire, and he was fine. His cat was fine, but he lost his house. And the whole community came together, provided donations that allowed him to purchase his own tiny home. So he stayed on his own plot of land, now has a tiny home. And not only did the community really rally around him to make sure he was housed, but they brought him food, and he wasn't willing to leave his property while they were building his tiny home. So all summer, he lived out of his car, and people brought him food and made sure he was okay, see to his appointments if he needed to go to the doctor. And that's really the ethos here in the Mad River Valley, is that if you don't know someone, you're bound to know them through the laws of what is it, seven concentric circles that you're bound to either be related or know them somehow.
Wow. It's beautiful. It's also like coming into the show, my first thought, I was going to ask everybody like what their dream is or their vision. But what I like about each of you is that rather than having a vision, you're actually doing things that are needed and based on what's in your community. So Karen, so we went through the, I'm still inspired by your Sunshine Fund and just how simple and beautiful that is. What are the other ways? I think we got through the first two or three. What are the other ways that you guys give back?
Yeah, so I had mentioned Good Brews for a Cause, where we brew certain beers to donate proceeds to nonprofits around Vermont. And then we also have what we call Sip of Support. And that's really our discretionary giving. As you can imagine, with the Sunshine Fund, it's based on a calendar year. And because we highlight two organizations per month, that's only 24 organizations that we can highlight each year. And we get way more applications than we do slots to fill them in. So Sip of Support has been a great way for us to provide donations to the organizations that seek to be supported by Lawson's Finest. And, you know, the last 2 years, we've really harnessed Giving Tuesday, which just passed last week. And it's really a way for us collectively, internationally, to look at how can we give back to the people and the places that are important to us. And it's a reminder that it doesn't need to just be one day. It can be any day. And I'm really inspired hearing Aaron and Richard's stories here today about how each of them and their businesses are giving back. And through Giving Tuesday, we're able to still provide donations. For example, for this year's Giving Tuesday, we had 32 organizations that we donated almost $75,000 to, as a way to say, you know what, we recognize that you have this need, especially in the pandemic. Grants are going away. Fundraising is really difficult. People all around are just having a tough time even making a go of it to support their family. And so we're really seeing that now more than ever is so important to support these organizations that then in turn support our neighbors.
Wow. And it's really true. We if you look around, you see so many groups that are providing food to people and other services, but it does seem like there's always somebody that needs something. I'm sure you have another story, Karen. I want to hear all your stories. This is another example of somebody you might have thought that there wasn't the need for something, and then you realize that someone needed something.
The days, so like I said, in the Sunshine Fund, we donate to one or two organizations per month. And I can tell you that those days that I get to sit with them and talk about how are they going to use their donations, it's incredibly powerful. And you can imagine some are heart-wrenching. And we raised money, accepted donations for a program called Our House. And it's based in Barrie, which is central Vermont, our focus of giving, because that's where we are and that's where we live. And Our House is an organization that supports children that have been victimized sexually. And they basically provide a welcoming, safe place for kids and their caregivers to come and talk about how they were offended and to be able to basically turn that into a court sentence, to be able to sit in court and look at their violator and say, this is what you did to me and this is how I need to be repaired. And so there's incredibly powerful stories. Some are heart-wrenching, especially with kids and adults being victimized. And some have really great positive stories that we can actually turn it around and see like, wow, these donations that our guests are providing in our tap room are incredibly tangible. One of our first donations was to our local ambulance, and it enabled them to purchase a whole new ambulance. They had been riding around in a decades-old ambulance that didn't even have an up-to-date radio system. So the folks that were driving the ambulance couldn't have a consistent way to speak to dispatch. And so for our guests to, you know, drop their donation when they leave our tap room, and then to read about a month later in our newsletter, wow, their donation actually tangibly made people's, like, it may have saved someone's life. It's incredibly powerful.
Wow. This is really a moving show. And I have to say, it's appropriate because we're in the holiday season, and I thought this was a great theme. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. In Wisconsin, cheese is our thing. Wisconsin is the only state in the country that requires a license to make cheese. From curds to cheddar, blue to brick, Wisconsin cheesemakers can do it all. We blend tradition with innovation to create an incredible variety of cheeses that you just can't get anywhere else. You've heard of a PhD, but have you heard of a PH cheese? Otherwise known as the Wisconsin Master Cheesemaker Program. This rigorous study of cheese is an elite accomplishment earned by only 80 talented cheesemakers in Wisconsin, and the program is only one of two in the world. Becoming a master cheesemaker takes 13 years and is basically like a doctorate in a specific variety of cheese, with intense requirements to succeed. Our Master Cheesemaker program allows makers to perfect both the art and science of their craft in a tradition so rich you can taste it. Find your next favorite cheese and meet our makers at wisconsincheese.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Support us and become a member at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. So it's a great show. We're talking about breweries giving back and with Lawson's Finest. And we have Richard from Argyle Brewing up in upstate New York above Albany. Richard, you're making a cool coffee stout. Tell us about that and the relationship with the coffee company.
So this is a beer that we've been making for the past 5 years. We do it seasonally this time of year. And it's personally one of my favorite beers that we do. We use a medium to dark roast coffee. And this year we're very happy that Aaron approached us about working together. They have an amazing product there. And we were very happy to put it into our porter. So it's a 6.2 alcohol or 6.2% ABV, 25 IBU porter. We use a 2-row base malt from New York Craft Malt in Batavia. More specifically their Erie Canal Pale Malt. And we like it cause it's a clean and crisp malt. We use New York grown Fuggle. And in particular, this batch of Fuggle that we're using has like a really, really pleasant, mild, earthy, vegetal flavor to it that we use in a lot of our beers. We also use some locally grown Munich malt and then a little bit of chocolate and black malt in there. So the coffee actually goes into a fine mesh filter bag, and we kind of just make a big tea bag and add it to the boil kettle with 15 minutes left to let it steep and soak in there. And it fills the brew house with all kinds of amazing aromas and everybody gets excited.
So you got caffeine in there?
A little bit. Yeah. I calculated it once. It's not a lot, but it's more the aroma, and it's really fun to do it on a day that we're open, when the tap room is open, because customers come in and they just, that's the first thing that hits them is that nice aroma of the malt and the coffee together. It's, you know, the beer itself has this nice fusion of like a dark, kind of slightly sweet, malty character, and it just really plays well with the coffee. And I know Aaron probably could speak more about the specifics of this particular coffee that we selected to go in this beer. We're really happy with it. I've been tasting it this week as it's chilling, and I'm excited about this batch.
Rich, just as a brewer, did you have to do like a test batch? Or you just know from experience how much coffee you put in?
The first few times we made this beer, we did test batches. And especially a few years ago when we upgraded our brew house, we did some more testing. The past few versions, we've just gone for it. And, you know, the experience on the system has made us pretty confident in how it's going to come out. So we just go for it now.
It sounds really great. I need that right now, the coffee porter. So Aaron, so like the highlights for you, you connected your coffee with Richard, but going back to Brazil. So what is it what are the people doing that you're supporting? Like, how do you harvest coffee? I don't know anything about it.
Sure. Yeah. So the cool thing is that coffee is a shrub. So like, we have to wait for it to flower. And this is where my like plant geek comes out. I'm like, oh, it's a berry, you know, and some things that you just don't even realize. And so you kind of see these like 4 to 5 foot shrubs in rows, you know, and you harvest it by hand picking. And you actually get all of the berries together. And then it's actually the seed inside of that fruit that is dried to create the coffee bean. And then it has to go through a certain drying process. The cool thing about this specialty coffee that we're using for the porter is called a yellow topaz. It's a rare varietal of coffee that comes out of Brazil. So instead of seeing red cherries, you actually see a yellow cherry. It has a really beautiful like floral flavor to it. This is a medium roast one. And so this comes from a grower. Her name is Alini. She took over her family's farm. I think it was her great-grandfathers, and she started growing coffee again and is part of an association called Flor de Café. So it's the flowers of coffee, and it's all the women. It's a women's association that they grow coffee, and it's really exciting. I hope, you know, my dream is, I mean, I'm hearing Karen speak of all these things, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I can't wait to do, you know, more with the coffee and creating programs like you mentioned. And it would be wonderful to just keep reaching out to more women, more farmers, and how we can bring them into this process. Because, you know, the U.S. market and, you know, bringing the coffee here, it seems, you know, we see coffee everywhere. But if you're a small farmer that's only producing, you know, a couple rotations, couple harvests a year, bringing it to the U.S. just almost seems impossible, you know. So that's really what we're excited about, is being that kind of that door to this market.
So this woman, for example, is a farmer. Approximately how much land is she farming coffee on?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know how much land she has.
I mean, like an acre, a half acre, 5 acres?
No. Like typically, like I think her farm is probably around 5 hectares, and I wish I could give you the conversion, but I can't. But, you know, like a medium-sized farm, almost like, you know, it's just not the huge ranches that you would typically see coffee coming out of. So smaller, almost like a hobby farm, I would say. You know, maybe that's like the American version of like, you know, a 5 to 10 or 15 acre farm here, which Washington County has a lot of those. So it's, you know, we rotate. So the next batch that we're getting in actually this week, it's in transit right now, is coming from our grower, Anna. She we're bringing in a new variety of coffee called Vermelha, Catuai Vermelha. So it's a red Catuai. And I'm really excited about it. And so that's kind of how we keep going, is by having different growers throughout the year.
Yeah. And are you like coaching them, or the steps that you've you know, modified? It's not just going to a wholesale commodity. It's not sitting on a boat for a year. Have you guys had to help, you know, I only use the word coaching because I think that's pretty generous. Like, are they, how do they ferment the beans? You know, what's the roasting setup? Did they already have access to roasters?
Yes. So the way that this has been set up is that we have our roasting happen in Brasilia. That's where it's packaged. We work together on building all of the FDA requirements to bring in our first shipment. And so we have to make sure that the USDA inspections are in there and getting that all set up. So that's kind of the bureaucracy side. Our goal is to be, you know, officially USDA organic, but that's going to take a little bit of time. COVID kind of slowed down inspection process for that in Brazil. But I think what we had to learn was how quickly can we get it packaged from roast date and get it here to the U.S. So that we can provide the freshest coffee. And you can taste the difference. It's incredible, you know, because the beans are there once they're ready to go. It's roasted and it's brought here. So you're getting a different type of roasting process. It's called a natural process. We're finding that to get the flavors of coffee that we have here in the U.S., unfortunately, people add sticks into it. They add oils. They add a lot of things that are just not so great on our body. And so we actually, you know, we only do a natural roasting process and to try to bring it as true to the original plant as possible.
So you're saying like Starbucks has the super harsh roast because they're not using the highest quality coffee beans, right?
For sure. Yeah, I definitely learned that very quickly.
You cut it with Dunkin' Donuts. You cut it with a lot of milk and sugar. So you're not really tasting the coffee. I know.
Yeah. Oh, they're burning it for sure. And they're, you know, it's being roasted in Europe and it's being roasted all over the world before it gets here. It's not such a, like anything, like any type of farming process. Once you start to open up, you know, that process and look at it, you start to see like, oh, maybe we should do this a little differently.
Yeah. I don't usually speak out against big coffee, but I did notice that, you know, years ago when I first started drinking those coffees and I'm like, wow, why is it so bitter? And then you realize, oh, that's why everyone's drinking, you know, very milky, sweet coffee drinks, because they're not really drinking. They don't have the taste of coffee, you know, but that's a whole nother thing. Tell me about the coffee stout, Erin, and then we're going to go back to Karen. You must be really proud. So it's a coffee porter.
It's a coffee porter. Yeah, I'm super excited about it. I used to, way back in the day, sell microbrews. And when I found out that I could put coffee in beer and I realized it was like a light bulb went off, I go, oh my God, this is going to be great. So we're really excited. We're going to launch it next Thursday. We're going to have a little event and get people together to try it.
So tell me a little bit about your area, because I've been up there, which is really cool. Erin and Richard, so just tell me like where the brewery is, a few favorite places to go, where you're going to launch the beer. You mentioned the Cambridge Food Co-op. I've actually been there.
Well, Rich, I don't know if you want to
take
a first crack at it.
Yeah, Richard, so, tell us about that. You have a great tasting room in Cambridge, New York.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that, because it really represents the area. It's very beautiful.
Yeah, we've been really thrilled to be able to have our tasting room in that building. And you're right, it's just looking at the building itself, you can see the history of it. And it's in a collection of other buildings that, you know, were used when the railroad was used more prevalently. And each of the buildings in that area is very historic and tells its own story. So, you know, when people walk through that area and come into our tap room and they just see the beautiful architecture inside, we often have live music. So local artists playing in the background, we get to share our product with them and talk about the beer and where it came from and who grew what that's in each style. The other cool thing that we like to do in our tasting room there is to have markets. So whether it's like a farmer's market on the weekends or a maker's market or a holiday market, we get local artisans to come in meet their neighbors, talk about what they produce, you know, hopefully sell their goods. And especially this time of year, we tend to do a lot of that.
So it's in an old train. Yeah. It's in an old train depot and it's beautiful. Yeah. So where's the launch going to be for the coffee porter?
We were thinking of doing that at our actual brewery in Greenwich. That's the original location. That's where all the manufacturing takes place. The tasting room there is smaller, but people can come in and they get to see the brewery equipment. And we thought that'd be kind of fun to have it there.
Well, just a shout out that I have some good farmer friends there in Washington County. And Cambridge is a great little town. It's like pretty much next to Bennington, Vermont. There's Greenwich, which is probably noted for having your brewery, Argyle. Yeah. And then you're right there in Saratoga where our friend Nate is at Saratoga Hard Apple. So, Karen, like back to you. So you're like social services director of Vermont. And now you're directing the funding for the Lawson's finest programs. How do we get to do more of these things with you? This is pretty fun.
Well, and I got to tell you, Jimmy, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me to come and talk about this. And what is very clear to me and to others here at Lawson's Finest is that we're just starting. I mean, this is only 3 years of a social impact program, and to have to really see our impact and the ways that we can use our business to partner with other organizations is so powerful. And so I'm on a mission to like dig deeper, you know, what can we do in addition? How do I talk to others to learn their best practices? And so we're just about to embark on our next 3-year strategic plan. And for me and the Lawson's Finest Social Impact Program, I'm really interested in engaging with other people and talking about what are they doing that we can add to what we're already thinking about. So it's just so incredible. And we're very fortunate and humbled to be able to do what we can to support our communities in this way through our business. And I just wanted to, Jimmy, make a note. At the very beginning of the broadcast, you had talked about the Michael Jackson Foundation. And through our Equity, Inclusion, and Diversity Board here at Lawson's Finest, we are actually going to be hosting one or two brewers here in Waitsfield, Vermont through the Michael Jackson Foundation. So we had to wait because of the pandemic. We do have an Airbnb where our original brewery is located, and the house that used to be where we raised our two young girls is now an Airbnb, and it's still an active brewery. And so we're going to be hosting some folks from the Michael Jackson Foundation there in Warren, Vermont soon. So I agree with you. It's such a cool initiative and we love collaborating and learning from other people.
Regrets, Garrett, I didn't get a chance to invite you to the show, but do you mind speaking about it a little bit? Because I think it's a huge, you know, going back to everything of 2020 and Black Lives Matters, what yes. Garrett did by stepping up, it's the Michael J. Jackson Foundation. Just tell us in your own words what yeah. it actually does, because that's really transformative.
Sure. Well, I know for us how we're approaching it is that we are making ourselves available and all of our resources here to really teach what we know about brewing. And so we're going to be inviting one or two folks here to Vermont. They're going to stay at our Airbnb. And they're going to be on site for the better part of a week to learn really all of the aspects of running our business. So they're going to be brewing beer. They're going to be packaging beer. They're going to be seeing how we run our tap room and retail store, talking to our sales team. This is really an opportunity for us to mentor someone who has the interest in embedding themselves in the craft beer industry and learning from us and what we've learned, because I can tell you that Sean and I really relied upon other people to help us as we grew. We would ask others, like, can you sit down and have a conversation? Because, you know, no one should have to reinvent the wheel over and over again. And I know in Vermont, the craft beer industry is such a sisterhood and brotherhood of like-minded people about supporting each other. And we want to do that for the Michael J. Jackson Foundation folks as well.
Wow. You know, and one criticism of, I mean, you guys went from, you know, the original garage brew house to, you know, you grew. There's one criticism that's come up that a lot of craft breweries, like other businesses, weren't really prepared to grow in terms of like their human resources. What's been your secret? Because sounds like you guys have done it right the last few years.
Oh, well, thank you, Jimmy. Appreciate that. You know, Sean and I, when we were growing, as so many other business owners do, when you're in it, you just put your head down and you have your blinders on and you work towards your end goal. And it's not until after you pass that finish line and you look in the rearview mirror and you're like, how did we ever get through that? I could tell you it was a lot of beer drinking. And you have to laugh in the end, like, because it could be super stressful. We grew very intensely over a short amount of time. We were prepared for it. We had a business plan. We had a key group of directors on our leadership team that were absolutely instrumental in making sure our growth was sustainable. And, you know, honestly, the team that we've created here, it really is the Lawson's finest family. We joke it started as mom and pop, and then we had a lot of kids. And everyone really takes care of each other. We care about each other. We've had, you know, some learning experiences that we can all take in stride, and we're just super fortunate. And I think that comes through in our social impact program, honestly, is that we're humble and we feel very fortunate to have what we do and bring a really phenomenal beer. And so we want to give back to those around us.
Great. So it's December. What's a special Lawson's Finest beer that I should be drinking that you might be drinking right now?
Yes. Well, I am drinking Triple Sunshine IPA, and it's something that you can all be drinking because we distributed Triple Sunshine to our 9-state Northeast market over November and December. Basically, every quarter, we distribute a specialty batch from our Waitsfield brewery out to the Northeast so that you could try something that you would otherwise usually have to come to Vermont to try. We do some big drops around the Northeast. And Triple Sunshine is part of our Sunshine family. We call it the culmination because it's 10.5% ABV. It's a big beer. But you know why I like it, Jimmy, is because it's an IPA that is not bitter for that big ABV. It's
really smooth.
Oh my gosh.
It's really like, is like a good Belgian triple, even though it's not a Belgian, where it drinks a lot easier than you think it is. You don't really taste the alcohol. You don't taste, you know, any harshness or bitterness either.
I would agree totally with you. And you know, I usually love my Little Sip IPA, and that's another one that folks around the Northeast.
That's what I'm drinking right now. I'm drinking nice. Little Sip. Yeah.
And that's one, like, you know, I wouldn't have two Triple Sunshines at 10.5% each, but I could have two Little Sips.
Yeah, no, Triple Sunshine's great. And then it really, for me, it's one of my favorite beers of this fall, early winter. So another great one by you guys. And just go around the room quick. Richard, a beer on tap right now that you made that you want to give a shout out to.
Well, we just released another fun seasonal called our Winter Warmer. And it's basically an amber ale backbone that we add on some figs, raisins, cinnamon sticks, cardamom, and cloves to. And we try not to go too overboard with the spices, but they're definitely there. We call it Christmas in a glass, and people enjoy it. And we're selling a lot of that these days. And that's something I kind of like to take home and sip on while I'm, you know, hanging out by the wood stove.
Well, I just want to say it's great to reconnect with you and say hi to Matt. Like I said, we did a show about Washington State agriculture and drinks way back 2016. And then Aaron, for you, you know, besides your coffee, what are you going to be drinking this week? You got something lined up? or a go-to drink?
Of course. Well, I actually really enjoy the Witch's Brew from Argyle. So I have some of that. I picked it up when I was there last week before Thanksgiving. So I've been drinking that. And then I did brew some coffee for our conversation, but it was a little late. But I love to make my coffee with a mocha pot. I don't know if you guys ever drink coffee that way. So I had a cappuccino before I got here.
So. Oh, that's great. Yeah, I don't think we have a Heritage Radio Network coffee show, but it's probably overdue, guys. I think that this is a fun thing. We did a fermentation show a couple weeks ago, and we keep forgetting that coffee's the process is fermenting. I still don't quite understand it. All I know is you're saying it starts as a flower, ends up roasted in my glass. So I think we can all learn more about it. This is really great.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm not going to ask any big questions because I think we covered it. You kind of want to, but I want to ask this one. Last one, holiday wish list, short answer. Karen, dream list or wish list? And it probably is for what you're doing.
Oh, Jimmy, are you asking me what do I want? What's my top list for Santa this year?
You can do that. Yeah. That's fine.
You know, honestly, I'm getting my wish by having our family be together this Christmas. Last Christmas, my family, I grew up in Connecticut, and my parents and my sister and her family are all in Connecticut. And we couldn't be with them last year because of the pandemic. And I got to tell you, some tears were shed on Christmas Day. So honestly, I am just so grateful that our family here in Vermont can travel to Connecticut and we could have a family Christmas together.
Great. And Aaron, what about in Brazil? What's Christmas like there?
Oh, Christmas is fun there. It's very different. You don't have, so Santa appears at the door in the middle of the night. So you have a big party and it's all through the night. It's the night that kids can stay up till like 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. And so Santa arrives and everybody opens presents. And I will tell you, the first one I ever went to, it was the biggest party. I was like, wow, this is a different type of Christmas, you know, no going to bed waiting for Santa. This is just having a great time. So yeah, Christmas in Brazil is through the night, which is really cool.
And Richard up there in Greenwich in Cambridge, New York. Either your Christmas wish or what's happening for Christmas.
Well, I'll kind of second what Karen said. You know, I'm just happy to be able to gather with friends and family a little more this year. And other than that, I would say maybe a little less snow at a time. Last year we got 48 inches in the first snowfall of the year, and I'd appreciate it if it was spread out a little more.
Well, hey, I'm feeling good, and I know you guys are all doing good work in your community and beyond. And big thank you, especially Karen, for the program that you do, the Social Impact Program. And thanks so much for supporting the Michael J. Jackson Foundation.
Thank you, Jimmy, for having me.
Okay, great. And thanks to Aaron and Richard, and big thanks to Armin Spengen, our engineer. We're going to catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at Facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.